In his 30 years in the federal government, he has concentrated on legislation and policy development in the public personnel management area. Mr. Jones is also an avid collector. Born the same year that the Lone Ranger radio program went on the air, he devoted countless nights and weekends over an 8-year period to solving the mystery of the masked man's music, which is the title of his new book now being published by Scarecrow Press. Mr. Jones holds a BA degree from Lake Forest College and an MS from Indiana University. I'd like to introduce to you Reginald M. Jones, Jr., who will speak on music from the Lone Ranger.
Thank you very much. I want to express my appreciation to the Association for Recorded Sound Collections for allowing an amateur to get up in front of you. I also want to give my thanks to Mike Gray and Mike Beal, who have given me a lot of support in this project, and to thank Richard Perry for inviting me. Like many people, I came to classical music through the motion picture Fantasia. Like the biblical Saul on the road to Emmaus, I was struck down by that production, and from that moment forward became nothing better than a maniac. I wanted to consume the entire classical repertory at once. And I'd only started taking a few bites when I learned that my two favorite radio programs, The Lone Ranger and The Green Hornet, had much classical music on them. And from that point on, I could do nothing else but research. So I have a long history working on this, and I think we might best start it today in a brief presentation which will skim over the top of that adventure with the introduction itself. Pause. The man who runs the cues has to know when to pause. Most of you sitting out there grew up with this performance of the William Tell Overture finale, which was recorded by NBC on July 26, 1940. But that recording was 7.5 years in the future when the Lone Ranger went on the air over Detroit radio station WXYZ on January 31st, 1933. At that time, the recording most probably used, and I say most probably because we don't pick it up on discs until 1938, was a 10-inch black label disc recorded in 1926 featuring the Victor Symphony conducted by Rosario Bordone. It sounded like this. Of course, it sounded a good deal better than that because they had a fresh copy, but that copy is courtesy of the Library of Congress. For those first 7.5 years, commercial classics from Victor, Columbia, and Brunswick ruled the air. However, the only hard evidence we have about what was actually used as mood music dates from January 31st, 1938, the date from which NBC began transcribing each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday broadcast for nationwide syndication. From that point on, the only commercially available records to touch a turntable at WXYZ would be those manufactured by RCA Victor. A sampling of early transcription episodes of The Lone Ranger reveals an imaginative and varied selection of moon-setting pieces of classical music, including Wagner's A Faust Overture, conducted by Albert Coates with the London Symphony on Victor 9734. And Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition, Koussevitzky and the Boston Symphony on Victor album M102. This is a Hut on Fowl's Legs.
What? Tonto do? Take this gun, hide it in your shirt, and listen carefully to what I tell you.
Earl Grazer is the Lone Ranger.
Cummings and his scheming companions left the ranch that night, planning to rouse the townspeople against Tonto.
And of course, the final scene from Wagner's Gitterdammerung, the favorite among several pieces regularly used for intermission music. This one is Leopold Stokowski, Philadelphia Orchestra, Victor 6625.
Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a few moments.
The narrator is Al Chance. Just as it seemed the commercial classics would rule the musical roost for the run of the program, there was a revolutionary infusion of new music in early 1938. Soundtrack cues from Republic Pictures. Although acquired by WXYZ to musically tie the radio show more closely to the 1938 serial, The Lone Ranger, much of the music had actually done service on earlier Republic productions, and some had not been used in that serial at all. If the tie-in was only so-so, the programmatic match was superb. Over two dozen in number, these musical vignettes written by gifted composers at Republic were to radically change the musical flavor of the Lone Ranger radio program, as you will hear in the following examples. First, Carl Hajo's Mechanical Montage.
We're riding to Silver Street.
The sheriff was not the only one who wanted to capture the Colt Gang. The Lone Ranger and his faithful Indian companion, Tonto, had been on the trail of the outlaws for several days.
And Alberto Colombo's Turmoil with its calm closer, which you won't hear until a little later, which then became the new intermission music.
Curtain falls on the first act of our thrilling Lone Ranger drama. Before the next exciting scene, please permit us to pause for just a few moments.
Need the cassette, okay? We spring the cassette out at this point. Always come prepared with both formats. Right there. Anyway, the narrator you were listening to there was Brace Beamer, later to become the Lone Ranger himself, but for several years serving the role as the narrator for the program. The two pieces we just talked about, Carl Hajo's Mechanical Montage and Alberto Colombo's Turmoil, were both pieces, as I said earlier, which were written for productions that had preceded the Lone Ranger serial itself. As a matter of fact, they were so popular that they were used repeatedly through 1937, 38, and even up until 1939. He's going to take a couple of seconds here to run out.
Could you reconnect the other speaker?
Went too far on that one.
Went too far. You got to back up a little bit on that.
That's just a couple of cues ahead. That's still back up some more. Back up some more. Just one more.
Thanks for your patience.
I guess mechanical montage again.
We need this speaker now. Mike, could you reconnect this speaker?
The sheriff was not the only one who wanted to capture the Colt Gang. The Lone Ranger and his faithful Indian companion, Tonto, had been on the trail of the outlaws for several days.
Mike, the speaker just cut out.
Which one?
This one here.
Earthquake style. Okay, we can run ahead with the Columbo turmoil now, which is right after that.
The curtain falls on the first act of our thrilling Lone Ranger drama. Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a few moments.
That's Brace Beamer. Okay, pause, Mike. While it may have seemed that WXYZ was now sitting in the musical catbird seat, big problems lay just over the horizon. As many of you know, 1940 was a troubled year for the broadcast industry. The American Federation of Musicians was agitating to prohibit the use of recorded music on the air, and the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers was embroiled in a feud with the broadcast industry that would end with a boycott of all ASCAP-protected music at midnight on December 31, 1941. To protect itself, early in 1940, WXYZ cut a deal with NBC to prepare a library of mood music that could be used on all of its radio adventure shows and would be impervious to outside pressures. The library was to be made up of classical selections and rearrangements of the Republic music. The recordings were made at the studios of radio station XEW in Mexico City by a team from NBC's radio recording division, which, preparing for the worst, was embarking on an ambitious recording schedule for its Thesaurus transcription label. By late fall of 1940, a 56-piece mood music library that included theme music for both the Lone Ranger and the Green Hornet was in place at WXYZ. A new musical era was launched. Included in the library were 24 classical selections and the additional 34 classical selections and 22 Republic rearrangements, including Turmoil, which continued to serve as intermission music. That's the calm closer.
Now to continue our story.
And Bill Lava's Saddle Tempo. And Friedrich von Flotow's Alessandro Stradella Overture. Beautifully vignetted, as mood music should be. However, no sooner was the library in use that it became clear that the Republic rearrangements were in jeopardy. Permission to use them could be pulled at any time by the copyright holder of the original pieces, an ASCAP member. As a result, all of the rearrangements were dropped for one full year. Into the intermission slot went excerpt 3 from Liszt's Les Preludes.
Thank you.
Faced with a shortage of musical interludes, WXYZ appealed to NBC for help. As a result, 34 new classical selections were added to the library. All were drawn from NBC's thesaurus files, some from the cache of Mexican recordings and the remainder from recordings made in New York City by the Rosario Bourdon Symphony. As you will hear, virtually all of them were produced by flip-of-the-switch editing, start mid-note, end mid-note. First off, Wagner's Rienzi Overture, Excerpt 2. That's on Thesaurus 1036, Band C. And the second one I want to play here, Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture, Excerpt 4, again with Bourdon, Thesaurus 1037, Band J. You only take what you need. By October of 1942, WXYZ could field a 90-piece mood music library, one that would sustain the Lone Ranger for the remaining 12 years of live broadcast, plus all of the black and white TV series. But even a mood music collection of this size couldn't always fill the needs of a radio program like the Lone Ranger, which used as many as 20 music cues per episode every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Many of the selections were unsuited to an adventure show. Therefore, commercial classics were occasionally slipped in when no other cue would do. And a particularly fine example of this practice follows with the Prelude to the Tempest by Jan Sibelius, Sir Thomas Beecham, London Philharmonic, Victor Album M658.
All right. I'll tell you what to do, and your hand should take the place of mine. Everybody, get plenty of lamps, clean sheets, hot water, quickly. Ruth, you sterilize the instruments and prepare the patient. They'll be ready to administer the ether.
Yes, Doctor.
Oh, I'm sure Bobby's going to have his chance.
I'll be ready when you are, Dr. Bell.
Sounds like the ether got the production staff. Now, before I close this session and open it up for questions, I want to just mention two things and ask one favor. The two things I want to mention are these. Because I've gone over this so swiftly, what I've managed to do is to flatten out an adventure story for the people at WXYZ and for me that was really much more in life at the time and life when I worked on it, like Liza clamoring over the ice floes. If you like detail, and I think everyone in here does, I left some flyers out there for the book, which will be published in September. It'll be out, available. And the second thing, because the music that came from Republic was such an integral part of the Lone Ranger for several years and served as the basis for the music that was later used in rearrangement, as a courtesy to a dear friend, Jim King, a colleague of Bill Lava, the one who wrote Saddle Temple, Bill has produced a record of early Republic music in beautiful sound. Two of the pieces on that were used on the Lone Ranger, Desert Riders by Alberto Colombo and Saddle Tempo. And it's available from him directly, tape or record, in a deluxe edition. And Veray's Sarah Band is now going to produce a standard edition, which they will sell only as a record. So if anybody's interested, you can go out and take a look at those. Then the second thing I want to do is to ask your help. I have spent what seems like a lifetime trying to identify all of the music ever used on the Lone Ranger. And of all the pieces I have heard, only one classic has eluded identification. A part of the mood music prepared by NBC was drawn from a complete recording made for Thesaurus, but apparently not issued. Although I have never heard it used on a radio episode, it did show up occasionally in the black and white TV series. In fact, I have listened to 900 radio episodes. Here, and I have not heard it yet, here is what it sounds like. Give me a hand. Name that tune. Stop it right there for a moment. If only it had started earlier or ended later and it even had a whisper of a tune, we might know what it is a lot more easily. I don't think it has ever been recorded before or since, but let's try it one more time. Ideas. No way. In danger of prejudicing your ears, there are passages like that. You'll find in Auber, you'll find passages like that in Offenbach. La Belle Helene has a very, very similar passage in it. But it was sort of in the air, I suspect, somewhere between the 1840s and 1870s. And my guess is it was in the air for those people based in Paris, rather than those based in Milan or based in Vienna.
It bears a lot of resemblance to Otto Nicolai and the Merry Wives of Windsor.
Yes.
It's not. It is very similar to that style.
Well, that's the remaining mystery of the masked man's music. Do you have any questions before we close off here? Yes, sir, in the back. That's not a name I'm familiar with. He might very well be. There was a lot of cast turnover. As a matter of fact, one of the things I'm beginning to believe, I have a good friend in Detroit about the same age as I, and he and I have been talking about the fact that within a very short period of time, everyone living in Detroit or who has ever been in Detroit will be able to assert that they were on the program, because we're finding more people who say, oh yes, and I was also in the cast of, and their names we just don't know. But there was an enormous rotating cast, including people who became famous like John Hodiak. Oh, there were, Fred Rito used to play a character called the Old Timer, and then later on it was, his name escapes my voice, a real gravelly voice when he talked. That was a character that was constantly being renewed with different names. Missouri was one of the names. The Old Timer was one of the names. And as they got somebody with Hughes, that was his name. Last name was Hughes, who had a good rumbling bass, gravelly voice, they would throw them in to portray that Old Timer who was often a mule skinner. Any other questions?
You live locally here, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I have another place for you to give this talk.
I'd be delighted. Be delighted.
The book is magnificent. It is an adventure story of how WXYZ and the RCA Manufacturing Company were fighting with each other and helping each other out to get these things recorded down in down in Mexico. And in Cuba wasn't...
No, just Mexico. Mexico said it was a wild ride in Mexico.
And there are loads of inter-office memos between the two companies included.
Plenty of photographs, music cue sheets from the radio episodes, music cue sheets from Republic Pictures, musical examples, and so forth. Yes, sir, in the back.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think it did, David. Very good. Okay, well, let us close as we began with... We have to thank the late Daniel, Maestro Daniel Perez Castañeda, for that performance.
Thank you very much for a most entertaining conclusion to this morning's talk. We'll begin again at 1:15 in this room. If you have, I'm told that the...